Welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Today is Saturday, May 23, and I'm your reader, Kathleen Jesperson. You'll need a mask and an umbrella this weekend. Rain showers are in our forecast. The front page story of the Gazette today, first Iowa child with rare syndrome heads home. Cedar Rapids boy treated for serious illness linked to coronavirus. This story by Michaela Ram. The first child in Iowa to be diagnosed with the rare inflammatory syndrome linked to coronavirus infection was released Friday from Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital. Fortune Jangi, 8, of Cedar Rapids, was allowed to return home after 9 days in the hospital battling the multi-system inflammatory syndrome. The rare, serious post-viral condition affects the heart and other organs and appears in children and adolescents after an infection from the novel coronavirus. The condition often requires intensive care and can be life-threatening. Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids announced this week it was caring for Fortune and another young Iowan with the condition, making them the first two cases reported in the state. So far, they remain the only cases in Iowa, state public health officials said Friday. However, because this condition first appears a month or more after a COVID-19 infection, a St. Luke's physician who cared for those patients warned more cases still could appear. He urged parents to be aware of their children's health, especially if they could have been exposed. Be aware, be alert, but don't panic, said Dr. Dilly Bertel, a pediatric cardiologist at St. Luke's Hospital. Providers were first alerted to this syndrome by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on May 14, after doctors in the United Kingdom reported dozens of cases appearing in children between 4 and 6 weeks after they were sickened with COVID-19. The second Iowa pediatric patient with this condition, who was admitted to the hospital shortly after Fortune, was released earlier this week from St. Luke's, officials said. Fortune was admitted to the hospital May 13, the day before the CDC issued the briefing. Fortune first began exhibiting symptoms May 9, said Koku Jagni, his father. A usually happy and playful child, Fortune woke up lethargic and refused his breakfast. A low-grade fever began the next day that soon turned into a high temperature along with red eyes and diarrhea. By the time Fortune arrived at the emergency room, he was very sick, Bertel said. He had low blood pressure and his heart wasn't working as well as it should. The first day I knew it was very serious, said Jagni, an immigrant from Togo. That concerned me a lot, but as a man of faith, it's out of my power whether I lose him, so I kept my faith. St. Luke's clinicians were able to recognize the condition in Fortune quickly because they were aware enough of multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, Bertel said. Bertel, who had received part of his medical training in New York City, was in contact with colleagues who were caring for some of the first cases of the condition in the nation. The New York State Health Department reported last week at least 3 children had died and over 100 cases were being monitored in the state. We were keeping an eye out for this, he said, so when Fortune first arrived at St. Luke's emergency room, he met every single criteria for the condition that fellow doctors in New York were telling him to watch for. Fortune's antibody test confirmed the suspicions, and he was admitted. Bertel said parents concerned that their children may have this condition should contact their doctor immediately. However, he said while it's important to be mindful of the possibility, parents should not panic because it remains rare. He emphasized the importance of continuing social distancing measures and other steps to avoid infection, such as washing hands often. Because that's the one thing we do know, and it's as if we didn't get this virus, this post-infection process won't happen, Bertel said. Symptoms of multi-system inflammatory disorder in children and adolescents include persistent fever, conjunctivitis or pink eye, rash, enlarged lymph nodes, swollen hands or feet, abdominal pain without explanation, vomiting, and or diarrhea. In another front page story, again, this one coronavirus related, home virus test is near, scientists at the University of Iowa say. This story by Vanessa Miller. Within a few weeks, University of Iowa researchers hope to begin offering a new COVID-19 at-home test that they developed to improve access to testing as Iowa continues to ease emergency restrictions. The at-home snort and spit coronavirus test is in its final stages of validation, with researchers seeking a few more COVID-19 positive patients to donate their saliva. Once it completes validation, the lab expects to receive a green light from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to make the at-home test available to anyone. People could get access to the test in a variety of ways, including home delivery or pickup from designated sites, according to Calvin Carter, a postdoctoral fellow at the UI lab. Really, very soon, we would like to ramp up statewide testing, Carter told the Gazette. Once researchers are able to roll out the home test, which eliminates the need for uncomfortable and in-demand nasal and throat swabs, the University of Iowa will become only the second academic healthcare enterprise to offer the spit test. Rutgers University, weeks ago, became the first in the country to land FDA approval for a coronavirus saliva test. UI professor Val Sheffield, known for his work in the field of genetics, repurposed his lab in mid-March to pursue prompt COVID-19 testing, realizing the widespread deficiencies juxtaposed with the rising demand locally and nationally. With FDA approval, swabs in short supply, and trained healthcare workers overextended, Sheffield and his colleagues began searching for a way to test saliva collected at home, without the need for swabs or trained medical personnel. In touting the test's accuracy, Sheffield said, it has proved extremely sensitive and can make a positive detection 3 weeks after a person's symptoms began and a week after he or she was cleared for work. That's not to say they were still infectious, but the test could still detect RNA particles from the virus, he said. Although with proper funding, the lab could provide the at-home testing for free, Carter said. Right now, researchers are looking at doing it at cost, which he expects will be below $100 per test. That includes the test kit, lab fees, a telehealth consultation with the result. The UI test could be made available to anyone, but the goal is to provide widespread testing in Iowa. And in another front page story, you'll need both a mask and an umbrella. There are options for Memorial Day weekend. This story by John Steppe. As many Iowa businesses begin to reopen and people look for things to do over the long Memorial Day weekend, here's a rundown of some of the places that will be open and some still off limits. There continue to be restrictions on businesses, and many have changed their hours or operate by appointment only. So it's best to call ahead to make sure a place is open. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that people maintain at least 6 feet of distance between other people and wear a face covering when others are nearby. In addition to those precautions, you'll need to contend with the weather. It'll be warm, the National Weather Service says, but expect rain and maybe storms. For the shoppers, Nubo Public Market is open, but hours vary depending on the vendor and change often. Some vendors haven't reopened. A Nubo spokesperson said there typically are 4 to 5 shops open at any point. The Coral Ridge Mall in Coralville will operate with normal hours, with 53 retailers open as of Thursday. That includes all anchor tenants except JCPenney. At the Lindale Mall in Cedar Rapids, it will be open with normal business hours as well. Open retailers include Von Maur, Rue 21, and Foot Locker. For you craft beer lovers, Big Grove's Iowa City Tap Room and Solon Brew Pub are open with in-restaurant dining. Lions Bridge and Thew Brewing Company are continuing curbside pickup but not open for in-restaurant dining yet. Clockhouse Brewing is doing carryout and has its patio open. For outdoor lovers, the trails at Indian Creek Nature Center are open, but the buildings are closed. Cedar Rapids Parks are open with some restrictions to keep patrons safe. Ellis and Gardner Golf Courses also are open with restrictions, in addition to tennis courts and disc golf courses. But pools, playgrounds, basketball and volleyball courts, restrooms and other pavilions, baseball fields and other facilities are closed. A full list of facility openings and closures is available on the Cedar Rapids Parks and Recreation website. Similarly, many Iowa City pools, sports fields, and recreation centers are closed, but city parks remain open. Mount Trashmore is closed, but is expected to open next month. The landfill-turned-park has been under construction since late fall. Iowa State Parks are open, but shelters, lodges, museums, visitor centers, and nature centers on park grounds remain closed. Camping cabins and yurts, along with modern restrooms and shower buildings, are reopening, but weekend camping reservations and cabin rentals have gone fast. For families with museum goers, the Metro Library Network, consisting of the Cedar Rapids, Marion, and Hiawatha libraries, is offering a low-contact or no-contact curbside pickup every weekday. Cedar Rapids and Hiawatha also are doing curbside pickup on weekends. None of the buildings are open yet. The Iowa City Library remains closed to keep employees safe, officials said. The National Motorcycle Museum in Anamosa has reopened with several restrictions. Patrons must use a credit or debit card and be at least 16 years old. The National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque remains open today. Visitors must purchase tickets in advance as part of the museum's effort to limit how many people are in the venue at one time. Staff will be wearing masks, and visitors are encouraged to wear them also. The Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, which shut down in the middle of a major exhibit across the Atlantic, Impressionism Through the French Lens, is among many museums in the area to stay closed for now. Air FX Trampoline Park's mini golf course is open, but the trampoline park is closed. And Collins Road Theaters is closed, but may reopen May 29. Speaking of movie theaters, here's a story by George Ford. Collins Road Theaters may reopen May 29. Although Kim Reynolds said movie theaters could reopen Friday, the screens in the corridor will remain dark until next weekend, or possibly until late June or early July. Bruce Taylor, owner and general manager of Collins Road Theaters in Marion, tentatively aims to open next weekend. "Our plan is just a hair fluid at this moment to open on Friday, May 29," Taylor said. "After looking at it over this weekend, I may decide to heck with it and hold off for a couple more weeks. It won't be set in stone until you see the movie times pop up on our website." Taylor said capacity will be reduced 50% to about 80 seats per auditorium under the state mandated governing the opening of theaters and other venues. "There will not be any late admissions, so you will be in there before the lights go out or you won't go. That is specifically to let people find a seat before the lights do go out. We also will have a pretty liberal refund policy. If you cannot find a seat that you're comfortable with, we will be happy to switch you to a different show or give you a refund." Taylor said the house lights in the auditoriums will be left on during the previews to allow those using the concession stand to safely find a seat. Plexiglass shields will be installed at the concession stand to protect customers and workers. AMC Theaters, the largest chain in the nation with 630 locations, including Southwest Cedar Rapids, said in an April 24 statement it will not reopen until new movies are about to roll out. The first summer studio film on the books is the Warner Brothers action movie Tenet, slated to open July 17, followed by Disney's live-action Mulan a week later on July 24. Many major movies planned for release this spring were postponed or put on streaming devices. Marcus Theaters will start its reopening process sometime in June with 3 to 5 locations. Film Scene, Iowa City's not-for-profit cinema, remains closed at the Chauncey and on the Pedmall, but continues to offer movies for at-home viewing through its virtual screen room. Moving to the Insight page, Protect Struggling Iowans is the Gazette's editorial today. Governor Kim Reynolds was asked this week about the possibility of extending her order prohibiting evictions and utility shutoffs as Iowans deal with the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. Her current order expires May 27. We're looking at that in conjunction of working with the Iowa Economic Development Authority to put in some optional grants that would apply for the apartment owners. We're looking at a couple different scenarios to make sure we're not removing that too soon, Reynolds told reporters. We understand and agree with the governor's desire to find a balance between the needs of tenants and the needs of landlords, who also are being harmed by the pandemic's economic damage, but we urge her to settle on a strategy as soon as possible. That's because Iowans who have lost jobs and income due to virus closures are running out of options. The Linn County Sheriff's Office has said it will resume evictions and foreclosures on May 27, with 5 foreclosures already scheduled for May 28 and more in June. Potentially leaving vulnerable Iowans with no home to shelter in should not be an option during a pandemic that's already sickened thousands of Iowans and killed hundreds. The threat of eviction should not push workers to risk their health and safety by returning to unsafe workplaces. On Thursday, the Iowa Utilities Board issued a revised order allowing municipal utilities and electric cooperatives to resume utility shutoffs on May 28, with investor-owned utilities resuming disconnections on July 1. The order requires advance notice and provides an extra 30 days for customers with health conditions or if a member of a household tested positive for COVID-19. But we believe shutoff protections should have been extended even further. There was some good news this week when the Iowa Department of Human Rights announced that the state's low-income home energy assistance program has extended its application deadline to June 30. The program, which provides money for utility bills to eligible households, is being extended thanks to funding through the Federal CARES Act. Beyond the urgent need for Reynolds to act and extend temporary protections, the legislature should more permanently address the needs of renters and homeowners as Iowa navigates a deep economic downturn in the months ahead. Lawmakers could revive a legislative proposal offering protections to mobile home residents targeted by predatory landlords, and it should abandon a plan to prohibit cities from offering civil rights protection to recipients of housing assistance. This is a moment when struggling Iowans need a state government that will help them ride out the storm, not leave them exposed to hardships that could endanger their lives. Reynolds must act quickly to make sure that doesn't happen. The legislature should build on that action. Again, that is today's editorial from the Gazette. In community letters, we have one letter today from Doug and Mary Kay Van Oort in Cedar Rapids. Mike Franken is the leader we need. Senator Joni Ernst has let down Iowans, and we believe Democrat Mike Franken is the best equipped to beat her. Ernst shows blind loyalty to Trump, voting for tax cuts that favor the rich at the expense of all others, voting for repeal of ACA and its pre-existing conditions coverage, and allowing Trump's rollbacks on environmental protections. Franken has shown courage to go against the grain, being the only no vote on invading Iraq while serving on a military planning board preparing for the operation. While we respect Ernst's military service, the GOP often touts, Franken's is more extensive. 36 years in the Navy, rank of admiral, and firsthand pandemic experience, having helped lead the U.S. response to the Ebola crisis. He also has Washington experience, serving on Ted Kennedy's Senate staff. Ernst runs on her rural roots, but Franken also grew up on an Iowa farm, plus worked in a hog processing plant to pay for college. His degree is in engineering with a master's in physics, and he believes in science and the seriousness of the climate crisis and its impact on Iowa's farmers, ag economy, and us all. Our June 2 primary vote goes to Franken, and the best chance to beat Ernst and truly help Iowans. On the Iowa Today page, a story by Lee Hermiston, Iowa City plans a banner June, flags to recognize Pride Month. Iowa City will show its pride during June. The COVID-19 pandemic means the 50th Iowa City Pride Anniversary celebration won't take place in person, but virtual events still are planned. Iowa City Equity Director Stephanie Bowers said, "In addition to those online celebrations, Pride banners will go up in Iowa City for Pride Month. The flag reminds us of the sacrifices made by activists involved in the LGBTQ civil rights movement," Iowa City Mayor Bruce Teague said in a statement. "For the past 50 years, Iowa City has led the way in its fight towards full inclusivity and acceptance of the LGBTQ community. As mayor and a part of the LGBTQ family, I am beyond honored to fly this indelible icon not only at City Hall, but through the streets of Iowa City in commemoration of 50 years of Pride. Pride banners will be displayed along Washington, Wade, and Williams streets. A Pride flag will be hung on the flagpole in front of City Hall," Bowers said. "Pride Month traditionally has been celebrated nationwide in June in recognition of the June 1969 Stonewall riots following a police raid at a gay bar by New York City. In 1970, the University of Iowa's Gay Liberation Front participated in the University of Iowa's homecoming parade. Iowa City is one of the few cities in the United States to have been involved in LGBTQ civil rights for 50 years, Bowers said. "Iowa City Pride could not be here and could not have grown into the organization it is today without the determination, fight, and support of our community." Iowa City Pride President Tony Sivathafat, can't pronounce that one. Tony said in a statement, "We are forever thankful. Pride has many different meanings to all of us in the community. What started as a protest and fight for rights to celebrations of those struggles to coming out and accepting ourselves and others. This year, we might not be able to celebrate in person, but we can still celebrate together." From Oskaloosa, this story by Tiffany McDaniel, a girl, 12, sets up a lemonade stand to support a parent with cancer. After learning that her parent has been diagnosed with cancer, a young girl has set up a drink and snack stand to help support her parents' steadily rising medical bills. On Tuesday, 12-year-old Molly Russell set up the fundraising stand, selling lemonade, water, punch, and snacks, all for a dollar. "I did it because my dad has pancreatic cancer, and I just wanted to help him because he's really loyal to me and a lot of other people," she said. "It's like a nice thing that I'm doing for him because I never think you'd actually get this because he's super active and well." Molly's parent, Jenna Russell, is transgender. She was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer March 11. Jenna is an avid hiker and was just about to take on the Appalachian Trail before her diagnosis. Jenna said she's super proud of her daughter for putting this fundraiser together. "I wish I could be down there to kind of help her out too," Jenna said. "She's been sending me pictures and she calls me every night and like every morning." Molly's mom, Desiree Fairchild, said Molly has always had a passion for giving back and hosting fundraisers. After hosting a similar fundraiser in Eddyville, Molly said she went home and asked her mom if she could do one at home. That's when Fairchild presented Molly with the idea to do this fundraiser. She always wants to do stuff to raise money. That's just how she is. So, you know, Fairchild said. She's done fundraisers before for like the animal shelter, and one Christmas we did the angel tree. She does lots of things. So this was just another thing she was thinking, and I said, well, why don't you do it for your dad? Fairchild said Molly had raised nearly $850. Molly's goal to try and repeat the fundraiser is 1 week each month. We really appreciate the community's involvement and support, Fairchild said. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Today is Saturday, May 23, and I am Kathleen Jesperson, your reader. Let's turn to today's obituaries. In other notices from Anamosa, Laverne LaBarge, age 85, died Friday, May 22nd. The Getch Funeral Home in Anamosa is in charge. From Cedar Rapids, Inez Allison, age 94, died Thursday, May 21. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service. In Solon, Jason Allen Pritchard, age 44, died Wednesday, May 20th. The Brosh Chapel and the Avicenture in Cedar Rapids is in charge. In Tama, Jamie Marie Stockel, age 43, of Winterset, formerly of Tama, died Wednesday, May 20th. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo, is in charge. Moving to the regular obituaries, from Newport Richey, Florida, John E. Staffenbeel, age 83, Newport Richey, Florida, passed away on May 19th. John was a teacher and school administrator in the Des Moines area for almost 40 years. John also served his country in the U.S. Army. From Oxford, Fred A. Kohler, age 72, passed away at his home on Wednesday, May 20th, surrounded by his family. A memorial service will be scheduled for a later date. From Waterloo, Danny L. Gibbs, age 62, formerly of Vinton, died Thursday, May 14. A memorial service will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, send cards to Cheryl Gibbs, 1208 Kaplan Drive, Waterloo, Iowa, 50702. From Williamsburg, Gordon Heitchusen passed away Wednesday, May 20th, at the age of 91. Celebration of life service will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, May 25th, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church near Williamsburg. Visitation will be from 12:30 to 5 Sunday, May 24, at the Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg. Please practice social distancing. Burial will be at the Emmanuel Lutheran Cemetery with military rites by the Iberg Polson VFW Post 8797. Memorials are for Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Lutheran Intraparish School, or Williamsburg High School Athletics. Messages and tributes may be left at PowellFuneralHomes.com. And finally, from Cedar Rapids, James R. Murray died May 20th. At the Woodlands in the Methwick community. A family funeral service will be held at Cedar Memorial West Side Chapel, 10 a.m. Saturday, May 23rd, with Father Mark Murphy of St. Jude Catholic Church presiding. Burial will follow at St. Joseph's Cemetery. Moving to the sports page, the cover story, Nothing We Do Is Risk-Free, this by Jeff Linder for the Gazette. IHSAA, IGHSAU Chiefs talk on opening summer sports. It's not as if Gene Berger left Wednesday's meeting feeling a massive sense of victory. By the end of the day, we had more questions than answers, the executive director of the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union said. The virus is still here and will be here for a long time. Hours after Governor Kim Reynolds opened school activities effective June 1, the state's governing bodies for high school sports voted to lift the suspension of their summer season. Both votes were unanimous, 7-0 for softball, 8-0 for baseball. We got to the point that we felt we had enough information and additional guidelines that made us confident we could do this, IHSAA Executive Director Tom Keating said. Before Wednesday's announcement by the governor, Keating and Berger were in frequent contact with Ann Lebo, director of the Iowa Department of Education, as well as representatives from the Iowa Department of Public Health. Softball and baseball teams may begin practice June 1. Competition will start June 15. Both will be full of logistical challenges and restrictions and health risks. Like Berger said, COVID-19 isn't going away. There's a sense that we're living in a different time, she said. There are things we're going to have to learn to manage. Nothing we do is risk-free. Of course we have concerns and worries. I would say that concern is a better word than worry, Keating said. My concern is, let's do this right. Iowa high school sports had been on hold since the end of boys' state basketball tournament March 13. Spring sports, track and field, soccer, golf, and tennis were then shut down. This weekend would have been the first day of the co-ed state track meet at Drake Stadium in Des Moines. State softball is scheduled for July 20-24 at the Rogers Sports Complex in Fort Dodge, but those dates are subject to change if necessary. Could be the same, could change. We've looked at two or three different scenarios, said Berger, who believes all five classes will remain at the same site. State baseball will be July 24 to August 1 at Principal Park in Des Moines. Keating participates sticking with that site and schedule. In the coming days, school and conference administrators will be determining how a regular season will work, how many games, how will transportation work for away contests, how will home games be staffed. So many questions. And here's another. Will all schools field a team? I would love for all schools to play, Keating said, but I absolutely support and understand the folks that just aren't there yet. To participate, it's an individual decision for a player, a coach, an umpire, Berger said. To put a team out there, it's a district decision, and a lot depends on where you live compared to where the outbreaks are. Schools have been shut down for weeks. Since then, many students have been isolated from their peers. Maybe kids don't miss writing a 5-page paper, but they miss being around their friends at school, Keating said. This will be a step in the direction of getting back in touch with that. Who's in, who's out? Have you been following the column that's been put together about schools with sports names that have long passed? Those have been fun to listen to or read. Here are some schools listed, updated as of 2:15 on Friday, who have made decisions about sports. Albernette will play baseball and softball. In our area, Benton Community is planning on playing baseball and softball. Cedar Rapids Kennedy is waiting for full guidelines. Centerpoint Urbana will play baseball and softball, probably at all levels. Central City will play varsity and JV baseball and softball if numbers allow. Clear Creek Amana plans to play baseball and softball this summer, all levels. Independence plans to play baseball and softball, all levels. Lisbon is waiting until the IGHSAU and IHSAA release further guidance next week. Maquoketa Valley will play softball, varsity and JV, and baseball, but varsity only. Midland will play baseball and softball, both varsity and JV. North Cedar is planning on playing baseball and softball. North Fayette Valley will play baseball and softball. Varsity for both, but JV for baseball. Solon will play baseball and softball at all levels. Washington, Iowa plans to play baseball and softball, all levels, as does West Branch and Williamsburg. The Mississippi Valley Conference has no official word yet, but the tentative plan as of Wednesday was for each division to play a round robin of double headers. River Valley will play varsity and JV doubleheaders with teams facing nearly all league opponents on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Tri-Rivers Conference plans to pick up their original schedule starting with June 15. South Iowa Cedar will have a single round robin, and in the Upper Iowa Conference, most schools will play a conference-only schedule. Moving to the living section, here's a message of hope. This story by Katie Mills, Giorgio. Garage door messages offer inspiration and a chuckle in robins. Since the pandemic began impacting eastern Iowa back in March, Angie Glynn, age 38, of Robins, has found herself playing with blocks daily. Specifically, Glynn has been using her kids' magnetiles to put up inspirational messages on her family's garage door. We put up our first message on March 22 and have surprisingly managed to change it every day since. She said a text message started it all. My Aunt Janie had actually texted me a screenshot of kids playing with magnetic tiles on the garage as a way to keep them busy while they were home from school, Glynn said. She knew how much my kids loved playing with them to build things, so we went outside right away that morning and spelled out my son's name with the tiles. Then it just dawned on me to put up an inspiring message. I came inside with the idea to change it daily just for fun, and my husband was on board. That simple idea has led to weeks of putting up a new message each morning. The garage has displayed messages from Do Your Part, One Day at a Time, Made You Look, and We Be Zoomin'. We made a list of ideas for messages with the kids on that first day, and then continue to add to it as we hear or see an inspiring or short message that we like, Glynn said. They've also turned to Pinterest for ideas, especially when there is a specific message they wanted to feature, such as something for Nurses Week. Most of our messages have an uplifting tone to them, given the gravity of what our world is going through right now, said Glynn. But it's been fun to throw in some humor every so often, like, put on your positive pants, something my mom would tell me when things get tough. Glynn said their stash of magnetiles, about 200, got them off to a great start. And while those 200 worked initially, the Glynns wanted to be able to thank frontline heroes, which required more tiles, so they ordered one more set, which puts their collection at 300 now. That gives us just enough to do slightly longer messages, so we can continue a little while longer, Glynn said. We knew that if we ordered more, our kids would get use out of them when we were done using them on the garage. The kids aren't just lending their toys to the effort. Initially, they helped put up the tiles as well. But when we started doing it at night so that the morning walkers in our neighborhood could see them on their morning walk, it's usually me or my husband, Jason. Walkers are taking notice. Devin Sires, age 43, also of Robins, lives just around the corner from the Glynns. He noticed one of their first messages when out on a morning walk with his family's dog, Boomer. It was the start of this whole ordeal, and I love the positivity portrayed by her messages, Sires said. When he saw a new message the next day, he was hooked. I started to look forward to it every morning. It's uplifting, he said. Sires said his favorite message so far, thanks to the nod to Disney, was, just keep swimming. There's always been a couple occasions where the Glynn kids left Boomer and I a personal hello with chalk on their driveway, he said. Sires took to sharing a photo of the garage message each day on his own Facebook account, so even more people could be touched by the Glynn's efforts. Angie and her family deserve all the credit. I'm just the messenger, said Sires. It feels like the messages have impacted others, like they have me. I love how I have gotten messages from people asking where her garage is so they can drive by as well. We love that Devin walks by each morning and shares the messages, said Glenn. I feel like spreading the positivity has definitely become a team effort. We've even seen some neighbors join in with messages on their garage, which is awesome. We love that. And we love that it's reaching more than just our Robbins community. The Glens are certainly feeling appreciated by the community. Just the other day, some neighbors, whom she's never met, sent her a beautiful bouquet of flowers in Thanksgiving. We've had several neighbors thank us when walking by, and even had one neighbor put a nice note in our mailbox, which is so thoughtful and unexpected. The images continue to bring a smile to people near and far. As for how long the Glens plan to keep up their efforts, Glenn said while they would love to keep it up long term, they're likely to be done by the end of the month. When we started, we really had no intention that it would go this long, she said. Just reading a comment every so often on Facebook that someone looks forward to the daily messages or appreciates the positivity is enough to keep us going. Such a simple idea. We're just so glad that the people are enjoying the garage messages. We really have a lot of fun doing it. And in a time where we feel super helpless, I feel like it's one small thing we can do to spread joy, positivity, and a sense of community. I also have access to the Iowa City Press Citizen. Here's a cover story from that paper. Chat from the Old Cap connects with UI alumni. This is a guest column by Dick Hakes, Taking Liberties. Hey, look, she's playing the Iowa fight song. This delighted declaration from my wife came as violinist extraordinaire and Hawkeye alum Lisa Dondeliger enthralled a live Zoom audience during a new University of Iowa online outreach called Chat from the Old Cap. As we watched by laptop, Dondlinger opened her Zoom interview with a perfect rousing Fight for Iowa rendition on her strings. Pretty easy to do for a Grammy-nominated pro who has collaborated with top artists ranging from Lady Gaga to Stevie Wonder and has a multitude of TV credits. And she's former Miss Iowa, by the way. Her appearance in isolation from her home in California is one of six live weekly online sessions held so far that many UI friends and alumni are finding to be captivating during the pandemic. This series showcases the amazing and diverse talents, careers, and accomplishments of various Iowa grads and other university-associated standouts. The relaxed format fits its informal chat theme. There is a comfortable family feel to the whole thing, a homebound Hawkeye community coming together to celebrate one of their own. Subjects are introduced, prompted with a few questions from a university host, and just allowed to talk about what they do for 40 minutes. Viewers tuning in from throughout the nation and beyond do not address the speaker, but can type in a question at the end. Here are the others besides Dondlinger who have been featured since mid-April. Chuck Long, the legendary Hawkeye All-American quarterback, College Hall of Fame inductee, and Heisman Trophy runner-up who led Iowa to its first Big Ten title in 27 years and then played 8 NFL seasons. Leah Cullis, celebrated Iowa yoga teacher, holistic health coach, author, and pal of Michelle Obama, who led yoga classes at the White House for 7 years. Also, Dr. Brian Wolf, orthopedic surgeon, team doctor for the Iowa football team, and director of UI Sports Medicine, who's been listed as one of the best doctors in America by U.S. News and World Report since 2007. Claire Lombardo, a critically acclaimed graduate of the UI Writers Workshop, whose best-selling debut novel, The Most Fun We Ever Had, is being adapted for an HBO series. And just this week, BJ Armstrong, all Big Ten honoree, who played 11 seasons in the NBA and was point guard for the Chicago Bulls when they won 3 national championships. The program is short and sweet, and the spotlight is on our guests, said Tony Hakes, Director of Regional Programs for the UI Center of Advancement, whose teams came up with the project. Full disclosure, he is this writer's son. It's a good way for us to connect with alumni during a time when we can't offer our usual gatherings, he told me. I think people like it because they're being overwhelmed by Zoom chats where you stare at 100 little boxes on your screen. We just show our guest speaker. Any alumnus, friend, or fan of the university can sign up to view one of these special chat sessions by registering through the UI Center for Advancement Facebook page under the events link. You can view past conversations on the center's YouTube channel. Chat from the old cap averages more than 100 viewers per session, with Armstrong drawing the largest online crowd yet with 350 registrations. Tony says there are plans to continue the weekly events through July, then reevaluate. Future conversations, he said, will include a university alum who was a speechwriter for Al Gore, plus another who is a celebrated costume designer in Hollywood. Oh, and we're going to feature another alum who creates music with his brainwaves, he said. He won't reveal more, but I'm thinking that particular chat might set a new audience record. And this, again, was written by Dick Hakes of North Liberty, who was a semi-retired newspaper editor. Another story from the Iowa City Press-Citizen, Mission Creek Festival bows out of 2020. The Englert Theater announced Friday that Iowa City's Mission Creek Festival will not continue in any form this year. We were obviously all kinds of heartbroken when it was first postponed and really hopeful that things would start to turn around and be able to come together for fall, the marketing director of the Englert said. Mission Creek is offering refunds but would consider the ticket price a donation from those who don't request a refund. Obviously, this has been a really difficult year in terms of revenue for the Englert, but we totally understand that not refunding is not possible for everyone. Last year, the Englert reported the festival attracted roughly 7,500 attendees. The Englert invests about $215,000 to bring world-class art from local, national, and international artists to the community for the festival, and they've received $99,000 in pass and ticket sales. Originally, the 2020 festival was planned to begin April 1 and run through April 4. However, when COVID-19 began to spread through the U.S., the Englert made a mid-March announcement that the festival would be delayed to September 17 with a slimmer lineup. At that time, the venue had planned to announce that lineup in June. While there is still a chance the public health situation could prevent us from launching these events, even in September, we think it's important to project hope, a goal for community healing through the arts, said Andre Perry, the theater's executive director, in the April release announced. In April, to compensate for the postponement, the Englert launched Mission Creek Underground, a six-entry series of videos featuring performances from local authors and music makers. This focus on film is something the Englert will continue to explore in an upcoming project expected to release later this year called Ghost Creek. Mission Creek's festival rescheduled date had coincided with the Refocus Film Festival from Film Scene. The Refocus Film Festival is partially a revival of a bygone Iowa City film festival of the 60s, and partially a new festive focused on film adaptations of various media. The Refocus Film Festival announced in April it would occur September 18th to the 20th. On May 22nd, Film Scene founder Andrew Sherburn confirmed the local theater is considering what the future holds, but had nothing to announce regarding cancellations or changes to the dates of the Refocus. There are two obituaries I could share from the Press Citizen also. From Tucson, Arizona, Rosella Reimer Dirksen passed away on April 30. And also from Coralville, Diane K. Kim Mitchell, age 80, died on May 16 at the birdhouse. A letter to the editor in the Iowa City Press Citizen. Bohannon, why I'm running for House District 85. Also, Kunkel has earned my vote for sheriff. The Kunkel story, the Kunkel letter by Ben Lord from North Liberty. Within the sheriff's office, I have had the unique opportunity to work as a patrol deputy supervised by Brad Kunkel for 3 years, with the subsequent good fortune to work as investigator next to Brad for the last two. As a certified forensic computer examiner, part of my job as an investigator is to process digital evidence for the sheriff's office and to assist other agencies from around the state when needed. Much of my work involves investigating the online exploitation of children, an epidemic that has increased exponentially in the United States to 45 million images and videos in 2018 alone. During the COVID-19 crisis, reports of child exploitation material have additionally doubled. Brad has always understood the importance of these investigations. He has recognized the value of partnership with other law enforcement organizations, educating youth and parents, resource investment, and working with nonprofit organizations to advance these goals. Electronic investigations are a component of every major investigation that occurs in Johnson County, often providing sources of essential information. For many in the community, the only type of crime experienced is online, such as identity theft or harassment. While law enforcement in some of these areas has been slow to adapt to these challenges, Brad will continue to expand the foundation created by Sheriff Lonnie Polkrebeck by increasing staff and making a commitment to an electronic investigation task force. As a conscientious leader who I have always known to be measured, thoughtful, and collaborative, Brad has earned my vote for sheriff. Again, that letter from Ben Lord in North Liberty. Just a little brief recap. Excuse me, I'll move to a different story on the Business 380 page. The Axel Group is moving to the Fountains. A Cedar Rapids insurance agency funded in 1928 will be expanding and moving to a new mixed-use office retail building under construction in the Fountains development at Blair's Ferry and Edgewood Roads Northeast. The Axel Group, formerly Millhiser Smith Agency, will operate the second and third floors of the 33,000 square foot building. An additional 11,000 square feet of lease space will be available on the first floor. Fusion Architects, part of the Amund, is finalizing plans for the new building, and Compass Commercial Services broke ground in April with a completion date of spring or summer 2021. Q4 Real Estate, also part of the Amund companies, has been working with Axel Group and the Fountains to broker the transaction. Axel, with offices in Cedar Rapids, Cedar Falls, Coralville, Waverly, and West Des Moines, will bring about 60 people to its new headquarters with room for additional employees. With continued growth and a vision that includes further expansion regionally, we're excited for the opportunity to design and lease a space to better serve our staff and clients, says Tim Gassman, CEO of Axel Group, in a news release announcing the planned move. And a final story from the Business 380 page, corn farmers keep planting more, but demand has not kept up with supply. Corn farmers are throwing another government-backed Hail Mary this year, planting more of the crop than in 2019, even though prices are near the bottom of a six-year slump. They call it plant and pray, said Al Kloos, a commodities broker in Wayzata, Minnesota. What you want is a disaster in some other part of the Corn Belt or some other country. The 2019 crop yielded the sixth largest harvest of all time. The U.S. Department of Agriculture now projects a record corn harvest in 2020. We have no problem producing the crop, said Brian Thalman, a farmer near Plato and president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. We've had 7 years now of steadily increasing production, and we've never had that before. Demand can't keep up with supply. Corn futures hovered around $3.15 per bushel last week. That's nearly a dollar less than a year ago. Farmers came into the spring with a large inventory of corn in storage, and demand for the commodity has been hit on multiple fronts since the onset of coronavirus. Ethanol plants have been shuttered due to decisions by the Trump administration to exempt oil companies from ethanol standards, and more recently, the cratered demand for all types of fuel caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Ethanol production is running at about 70% of capacity, Kleiss said. Meanwhile, the shutdown of restaurants and idling of meatpacking plants that have led to farmers euthanizing chickens and hogs means the need for corn to feed livestock will probably drop another 20%. You're not going to drive by acres that aren't producing anything, and there's just not another crop out there. Corn and soybeans are our choices. I think we do need more diverse cropping practices in more diverse markets. I really do. That does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on Saturday, May 23. I'm your reader, Kathleen Jesperson. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.